Right, so this Tanya, November
25th. The part that's left is, most of it is very heavy-duty Kabbalah, so I think probably this may be the last week that we'll be doing Tanya, because, you know, we covered most of the Tanya that is ethical and Musar and guidance for people. We did do. The part that we didn't do fully is the part that is more metaphysical and having less of a practical.
Which one are these, by the way? In the Tanya, which?
We've done portions of every part of the Tanya. I mean, we have done big portions of every part, all five parts of it.
So all five parts. So the metaphysical is all across.
No. Everything's all across. But what I'm saying is that the point is that the part that's most relevant for us is the portions that deal with how to serve Hashem.
Right.
And we did cover, although we could always do it again, we did cover those portions of the Sefer. The parts that we covered some of, but a lot of we didn't, the part that we did not cover deals with metaphysics, which is very, very heavy, heavy-duty Kabbalah. So, I'm not especially expert in it, and I might be time to think of a new topic. But what I wanted tonight is also a fairly heavy-duty, but this goes back to the first chalak of Perek Lamed Tes and Mem, chapter 39 and 40.
In which one is
the first chalak?
Oh, first.
Yeah, well, that's the only chalak that has a Perek Lamed Tes.
The first one is 54.
Yeah, I'm saying, but there's none of the other chalakim has Lamed Tes. So maybe Lamed Tes, it's only the first chalak. And what is very interesting about this is the Baal HaTanya is going to talk about the idea of what does it mean to do mitzvos lishma, for the sake of God, and then there's something called doing mitzvos not for the sake of God. And what is especially historically very interesting about this is that there was a sefer that came out shortly after the Tanya. I mentioned this in my other class. From Rav Chaim of Volozhin, which is also a very, very well-known sefer, Nefesh HaChaim. Rav Chaim Volozhiner was the Talmud of the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, who, of course, excommunicated Hasidus, and in particular, refused to meet with the Baal HaTanya. Remember, the Baal HaTanya, as a young man, was at a crossroads. He was not sure if he should go to the Vilna Gaon and become his Talmud, or go to the Mezuritcher Magid and become his Talmud. So Rav Shneur Zalman could have gone either way. He went to the Mezuritcher Magid. But Rav Chaim Volozhiner had a very conciliatory attitude towards Hasidim. He did not want to make any machlokas with them. And in fact, in the Volozhiner Yeshiva, many Hasidim were accepted, and he encouraged them to keep their minhagim. He did not at all allow any denigration. But the Nefesh HaChaim is a theological work of Kabbalah, which is actually engaged in what you might call a silent dialogue with the Tanya. In other words, he doesn't quote the Tanya and doesn't refute it, but the arguments that he's making and the things he's trying to be cholek with, arguing with, are really points in the Tanya. So in many, many ways, the Nefesh HaChaim is a dialogue with the Tanya, and they take some very, very different positions on certain issues. And one of the issues in which they take different positions is the issue that is discussed in Perek Lamed Tes. We will see that the Baal HaTanya has a very, very strict view, because he says the most important thing in Torah and mitzvos are the kavanos that you bring. And if you do Torah and mitzvos without the requisite kavanos, it doesn't count for so much. It's kind of an empty shell. And the Nefesh HaChaim is designed to establish the idea that even on a mystical level, the Maisa HaMitzvah itself, even without Kavana, changes the worlds and the universes, and it brings spiritual forces into the world. Because again, you see what Rav Chaim Volozhiner was afraid of. Rav Chaim Volozhiner was afraid of this. If you emphasize to such a great degree that the Iker, the most important thing in a mitzvah, is the love of Hashem and the Yiras Hashem that you bring to a mitzvah, which of course is important. Nobody, Rav Chaim Volozhiner is not going to say it's not important. But he says, if you emphasize the Ava and the Yira more than the Maisa HaMitzvah, so what he was afraid of, and the Vilna Gaon was afraid of this as well, is that people would give relatively less significance to doing mitzvos in an exact way. Let's take Siman Kriya Shema as a good example. Rav Chaim Volozhiner uses this as an example. The idea of Kriya Shema is to love God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, to be makabel, to accept upon yourself the yoke of the kingdom of heaven. That's, of course, what Kriya Shema is about. So let's assume Zaman Kriya Shema is going to end at 9 o'clock. At 9 o'clock, you're still very tired. You were a chassid, you were up at a tish till 5 in the morning. So if you have to say Shema before 9, you're going to be falling asleep, you're not going to have kavana. So a chassid might say, the philosophy of a chassid might be, if the most important thing in the Shema is that I have this fiery passion to love God, and I can do that better at 10 o'clock than at 9 o'clock, why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu want me to say a superficial Shema at 9 if I can do a such better one at 10? Now that's a very destructive attitude, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us exactly what we're supposed to do. But you see, if the ikar of a mitzvah is defined to be the kavana, that could lead to a degrading of halachic specificity. To give you a reducto ad absurdum, you know, many women in particular, men too, but women especially, are very, very exhausted by the first Seder. Been cleaning for Pesach, it's tremendously exhausting. Sometimes they fall asleep, they can't really participate in the Seder, and the wine doesn't help either, the 4 cups of wine. So a woman might say, or a man might say, you know, why don't we take off the first 2 days of Pesach? We'll make this Gevaldika Seder Chol HaMoed with Yitzias Mitzrayim, Hisoris, you know, now it sounds absurd, but one might say, what does Hashem want more? Doesn't Hashem want my heart, my emotion, my soul, my feeling? He's not going to get that the first night of Pesach. Or he'll get it the third night of Pesach. Or he'll get it after Pesach. Now, this is an absurdity, because once again, although it's always good to have a meal to give gratitude to Hashem, I mean, and you can make a Seder tonight, but you know, it wouldn't have the chashivas of a Seder. You wouldn't be fulfilling matzah and moror and sipur yitzias mitzrayim. Right? So really, what the Nefesh HaChaim tries to do, and of course, they move in opposites, because the truth is, the emes is, it's in the middle. That the Balatanya is going to emphasize the tremendous importance of your inner spiritual feelings. And the Nefesh HaChaim is kind of a reminder that you have to emphasize the importance of the Maisa HaMitzvah. And the reason he's doing that is because the tendency in Chassidus was to emphasize the Panemius, the inner state, over the Chitzenius, but that could result in a denigration of Chitzenius, which means ultimately people could break Halacha totally. And by the way, when I have used this mashal before, and I said about, you know, imagine the absurdity of somebody who says, I want to make a Seder after Pesach, because I'll have the emotional energy. So I said this to a group of non-religious, non-Orthodox people, and a woman actually said, yeah, that's what my family did. The family couldn't get together till after Pesach. You know, life imitates art, you know. So we made a Seder after Pesach. So what you think is strange, you know, actually it happens. It happens sometimes. So the Nefesh HaChaim is talking to the Tanya, I mean, even though they don't quote each other, because he's really addressing that specific issue. And what is interesting is, the Tanya is based totally on Kabbalah, and the Nefesh HaChaim is based on Kabbalah, because they were trying to show that the Chassidish sources can also be read in the other way to emphasize the Chashivas of the Maisa HaMitzvah. It was using the sources of the Chassidim to kind of give a tochecha, give a bit of a musar or a corrective to what were the excesses of Chassidus. The other point was that the Vilna Gaon was afraid that a Chassidus would de-emphasize the importance of Torah learning. Now, the Bala Tanya talks about Torah learning all the time, but here is the important nekuda. In fact, the Bala Tanya was absolutely one of the Gedolei Hador in Shas and Halacha. I mean, he absolutely was, without a doubt. He wrote an updated Shulchan Aruch, which to incorporate many, many shitas. This is called the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the Shulchan Aruch of the Bava Tanya. And this is quoted by all poskim. The Mishnah Berurah is quoted by all of the non-Hasidic poskim. It's a very authoritative sefer of halacha. Actually, it's one of the, besides the fact that it's authoritative, it actually is one of the clearest halachic books. People should learn it more than they do. It is a very, very clear. I mean, basically, he explains halachas in terms of all of their reasoning. If you want to know the reasons for halachas, Shulchan Aruch HaRav is one of the absolutely best svarim ever written to explain how halacha works. In fact, it's interesting, Rav Zevin, this is a very subtle book review. Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin was a great Talmud Chacham, and he actually was a Lubavitcher himself, although he was an old Lubavitcher. He was not, he was much older, he was older than the Lubavitcher Rebbe. But Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin was able to go through Sfarim the way people go through novels. He actually used to write book reviews of Sfarim, like he'll, it's interesting, he'll go through a Peirush on the Holy Yerushalmi and write a book review, So he actually has a book review on the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. And he makes a very subtle point, the difference between the way the way Rav Shneur Zalman presents halacha and the way Rav Yosef Karo presented halacha in the original Shulchan Aruch, which is really just rules without giving reasons. The Shulchan Aruch itself does not give you reasons. He says like this, in halacha, there is a concept, everybody knows in halacha, there's a concept, b'di'evet, l'chatchila, the way you're supposed to do something. And if you didn't do it the right way, so b'di'evet, after the fact, okay, something might be okay. Now, when you try to explain halacha to somebody, how do you communicate it? Do you say, this is what you do, but if you messed up, the other way is okay? In other words, do you first start with a l'chatchila and then give the b'di'evet after the fact? Or do you present halacha, you must do it this way, but it is better to go one step better? Or do you start with the b'di'evet? So Rav Zevin says, it depends what your pedagogical goal is. If your pedagogical goal is to tell people how they should live, how they should act, you start with the l'chatchila. As a Jew, you should do it this way. Nebuch, if you didn't, then that way is going to be acceptable. But if you're trying to explain the logic of the halachic system, what does halacha require you to do? You actually start with the b'di'evet, because the halacha is the b'di'evet. The heder mitzvah, the beautification, is l'chatchila. So he points out stylistically, the Shulchan Aruch always starts off by giving you the l'chatchila and then b'di'evet. And the Rav Shulchan Aruch always gives you the b'di'evet and then l'chatchila, because the halachic requirement, in other words, if I want to understand what a mitzvah tells me I have to do, so the mitzvah is telling me to do the b'di'evet. That is what the mitzvah requires. The l'chatchila is an enhancement, a heder, and the like. So he says, the goal of the Shulchan Aruch was to tell you what to do. The goal of the Shulchan Aruch HaRav is to explain why we do it, the essence. And the why is Makushar more to a b'di'evet. That's what Rav Zevin points out. He points out many, many, many examples. So the Nefesh HaChaim, as I say, one thing the Nefesh HaChaim is addressing is the importance of the Maisa HaMitzvah. The other thing he's talking about is the importance of Talmud Torah. Now, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the Bala Tanya, right, the Rav Shneur Zalman, obviously is tremendously makshiv Talmud Torah. He talks about Torah learning all the time. That's why some say, he's the most litvisha of all the Hasidim. He talks about Talmud Torah. But when he talks about Talmud Torah, he talks about Talmud Torah as consciously thinking about connecting to Hashem. That when I learn Torah, I should be thinking about how this connects me to the Almighty. And he defines Torah Lishma as Torah with the conscious intention of developing a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's called Dveikus. Rav Chaim Volozhiner was actually opposed to that. Because Rav Chaim Volozhiner says that if you use Torah as a means for Dveikus, then you're not necessarily going to be so interested in the nitty-gritty of understanding a sugya. As you can understand this, I mean, in fact, this what Rav Shneur Zalman says is an attitude that is often, in a very superficial way, of course, often emulated by all sorts of people who aren't, you know, they want to be inspired. And if it doesn't inspire them, right, so you open up a Tosas, you open up a Vakama, you discuss if a Shor gores a Pura, you discuss two people hold on to a Talis, you'll often see people will say, that doesn't inspire me, it doesn't turn me on. Right? In fact, Adnan Steinsaltz, it was almost like a prank. Adnan Steinsaltz was a very mischievous person. And when he started producing his Gemara in English, now, the Hebrew he's almost finished after 40 years, 50 years. But, you know, he has the English. So it became a big thing. It was a big thing in the press, the New York Times. So a group of kind of wealthy businessmen in New York invited him to give a presentation on the Talmud because they heard that the Talmud has the meaning of life, the secrets of life, the purpose of human existence. It is there, of course. So he deliberately chose, because, you know, he could have chosen portions that deal with the meaning of life. Yeah. He chose a hyper-technical sugya dealing with, you know, an egg that's laid on Yom Tov for two people. You know, he chose something as if to demonstrate that the Talmud is filled with nitty-gritty detail. It isn't always about consciously being inspired. But you see the problem that Rav Chaim Bolesner is identifying here. If I learn to be inspired, there's a lot of details, which, I mean, of course your neshama actually is being inspired, but the point is on a conscious level, you don't feel inspired necessarily. You have to work very hard. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner says the following. You'll notice, when we talk about learning Torah lishma, lishma is the feminine. Learning Torah, we always translate it for the sake of God. But that's not what lishma means. Because then it would say lishma, because normally God is referred to in the masculine. Lishma means you learn Torah for the sake of Torah. That means, he says very simple, it does not refer to consciously thinking about God. It refers to learning for the sake of knowing and mastering the material. That is Torah lishma. If I learn for kavod, that's not lishma. But if I learn because I want to know, he says, that's enough. That's genug. That is Torah lishma. One does not have to consciously think about Dveikus Bashem. Again, Rav Chaim Volozhiner's fear was that if you put too much premium on inspiration, that's not going to get you through the technicalities of understanding, particularly the Torah Shebaal Peh. Of course there is so much in the Torah that's inspiring. That's absolutely the case. But there's a lot in the Torah that, at least when you first approach it, one does not necessarily get consciously inspired. Now again, the Neshama, the Orech Chaim says, if we would know the joy that our Neshama, or not if we would know, if we would feel the joy that our Neshama feels when we learn Torah, we would never be able to stop. We would die of starvation. He actually says, Hashem made it that we don't know what our neshama is feeling, because then we couldn't, because Hashem wants us to live. So of course, every word of Torah, the neshama gets a joy that is beyond measure. But on a conscious level, there's much technical stuff that does not necessarily inspire. And Rav Chaim Volozhiner says, don't think about your relationship to Hashem directly. Just learn the Torah, l'shem the Torah, and that is Torah lishma. And that, once again, is a debate with the Baal HaTanya as to what is Torah lishma. Now, Rav Chaim Volozhiner does have an interesting qualification, though. And this is what he says, and this is actually the basis of the Musar practices of yeshivas to this very day. And that is, the Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos on a pasuk. This is a verse in Mishlei that says, "Yiras Hashem, he otsaro." The fear, the reverence of God, is a treasure house, a storehouse. So the Gemara says the following. If a person has Yiras Hashem, which is not so much fear of God, it's reverence and awe of God, it is like the storehouse that preserves his Torah knowledge. Without Yiras Hashem, the knowledge does not elevate you. Yiras Hashem is Eitzer, is the preservative. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner makes an ingenious halachic argument. The Mishnah says in Bava Kama, Bava Basra, that when I sell you grain, let's say you contract to buy a ton of grain, a certain percentage of that grain is allowed to be dirt. In other words, and the reason is because the soil in which grain grows is said to be a preservative for that grain against spoilage. So when you contract for a ton, I can give you less than a ton plus some dirt. So, because that's the preservative. So what is the ratio of preservative to grain? So the cheshbon of the Mishnah is 1/24. So let's take it simple. So if I sell you 24 tons of grain, one ton can be dirt. 1/24. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner says, so you see that grain needs a preservative equal to 1/24. Now the Torah is our grain. Yiras Hashem is the preservative. So Mimela, he says, you need to devote 1/24 of your learning time to thoughts of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to arouse in your heart Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. That preserves the Torah knowledge. Now, if you assume that the three siddurim of a yeshiva commonly add up, well, it's a little longer, but let's say it could add up to 12 hours. The Lashon of the Seder was 12 hours a day. So how much time should you be thinking about God and Dveikus? 1/2 hour a day. And Rav Chaim Volozhiner says that's the basis of the idea in Musar. In yeshivas, they try to have a conscious Seder where they learn Musar about the ethics and morals and Yiras Hashem and Avas Hashem. They can learn Tanya, but that would be 1/2 hour a day. And Rav Chaim Volozhiner, it's a very ingenious comparison. Yiras Hashem is the preservative. Preservatives are 1/24, therefore, that gives you 1/2 hour a day. As opposed, for example, if you go to a Hasidic yeshiva, actually not all Hasidic, but if you go to a Chabad yeshiva, also learns Gemara mainly. I mean, Gemara is mainly what they learn, but they will learn Hasidus for up to 3 or 4 hours a day. It's a very, very different, it is a different curriculum. Now, other Hasidic yeshivas aren't that way. If you go to a Gary yeshiva, for example, they don't learn Hasidus to that degree. Chabad is a bit unique. How many hours? I don't think it's certainly not as exact as Rav Chaim Volozhiner, but they say this is how many hours a person needs for Hasidus. You know.
And also the ratio is Chacham and Yiras Hashem. You're describing that Yiras Hashem is a preservative.
Yeah.
But how about it being actually a schala for acquiring Chacham?
Well, yeah, absolutely. It's a foundation of everything. In fact, there were Gedolim who were even against any Musar in the yeshiva curriculum. The Rav Chaim Soloveitchik took the position. The Brisker took the position. Of course, this was after Rav Chaim Volozhiner. This was in the time of Yisrael Salanter. That's really later. But he took the position that learning Torah alone will be mesakein your mitos, will make you of good character, without the need of working on Dveikus or the like. That's taking Rav Chaim Volozhiner further than Rav Chaim Volozhiner. But Rav Yisrael Salanter responded this way. Rav Yisrael Salanter responded that the Torah is a diet for a healthy soul. It is a perfect diet for a healthy soul. But if one has sicknesses of the soul, and sicknesses of the soul include bad midos, cruelty, arrogance, selfishness, anger, just as a sick person needs to take medicines, and a regular diet is not going to always help them. So in our generation, we need consciously to work on our midos and the like, and that's Avas Hashem, Yiras Hashem. But be it as it may, these two points, the importance of the external mitzvah and the importance of Torah learning without a conscious thought about connection to Hashem, directly are two nekudos that the Nefesh HaChaim emphasizes, kind of the opposite of the Baal HaTanya. Now again, when you look at these as machloks, I mean, you have to understand everything is in perspective. I mean, if somebody were to ask the Baal HaTanya, is it okay if I make a Seder after Pesach? He of course would say no. He wouldn't disagree with the importance of the Mitzvah. And similarly, if you ask Rav Chaim Volozhiner, is it perfectly fine to do mitzvos, not thinking about Hashem? He would say, of course not. In other words, each is really moda to the other. But it's a question in avoda, what do you emphasize? What do you communicate? And this is the way it always is in these different svarim. It's not so much that these are arguments. You know, one says, this is the most important, this is the most important, but rather, as each one emphasizes that particular aspect of Avodas Hashem, you need the other one to remind us not to take something to an extreme and to incorporate both both elements. So that's why, I mean, well, in the yeshivas, Tanya is learned less than Nefesh HaChaim, but still, you know, there are yeshivas that, non-Chassidish yeshivas, that the Tanya is learned, and the Nefesh HaChaim are learned. Rav Shraga Feindelman Levitch, who, it's unfortunate because there aren't that many mechadchim that are as eclectic as he was. Rav Shraga Feindelman Levitch, I know Rav Hoffman must have heard of him, you were in Torah Vidas, but he was a person who found, not founded, but he was the great, great inspiration of Torah Vidas for many, many years. Rav Mendlovich, Mr. Mendlovich. Yes. But not only Torah Vidas, he was the inspiration of Torah Amsora, the day school movements, many, many, many different aspects of Orthodox Yiddishkeit in the United States. And although Mendlovich is the way it was pronounced. Rav Shraga Feivel Mendlovich. Although he was a musmach, he of course was a rabbi and a great Talmud Chacham, but he always insisted that he would be called Mr. Mendlovich. He didn't want to be called rabbi. Because he was not Rosh Hashiva of Torah Vidas. In fact, it's not clear what his position was. He was the behind-the-scenes person. He was not a Rosh Hashiva, he was not a Rebbe. He gave some classes in Torah Vidas, but he insisted he was Mr. Mendlovich, and his main thing was he considered himself a fundraiser. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky used to say about Mr. Mendlovich that he thinks he's Mr. Mendlovich, but I know that he's Nister Mendlovich. Nister means the hidden one. But what Rav Shraga Feivel would do is, he, within Torah Vidas, that was a Litvisha, all the Rosh Yeshiva were the Litvisha, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky and the like, he tried to keep a Hasidic spirit in Torah Vidas as well.
Torah Vidas.
And that's why Torah Vidas was a bit unique, because it was a very Hasidic yeshiva, along with the Litvisha Rosh Yeshivas, Rav Shlomo Hyman, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Reuven Brzovsky. So it was a little more eclectic than you would find in a lot of places. And he would give shiurim in Svarim like Sfas Emes, Svarim like Tanya, Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, Nefesh HaChaim. And he was really an example of a very, very eclectic person who drew Yesodos, foundations, from all of these different Svarim. So he would give a shiur in Nefesh HaChaim, and he would give a shiur in Tanya, and he would give a shiur in Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, and he would show how all of them are expressing the emes of Torah.
Rav Shor used to give, I think it was Mesila Yishor, and he also gave.
Right, Rav Gal Yishor.
Rav Gal
Yishor was also a little, and Rav Gal Yishor also was a Hasidic person who learned in the Litvish yeshivas in Europe. So Rav Gal Yishor was also. So if you look in the Or Gedol Yo, you will see that, in fact, the reason why in the Litvish yeshiva world, certain Hasidic Svarim are accepted. Again, the Tanya is a little controversial, but the Sfas Emes, Rav Tzadok, these are absolutely accepted in mainstream yeshivas, is primarily because of two Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Gedal Yishor in Torah Vidas, and Rav Yitzchak Kuttner in Chaim Berlin. They kind of, you know, we don't realize, because they brought in certain Svarim that otherwise would have been Chutz L'machaneh, because there are other Hasidic Svarim that are not learned in yeshivas that much. And they kind of brought them in. Just as Rav Dessler brought it in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Dessler, the Michtam Eliyahu, you see, he comes from the Musar tradition. Now, the Musar tradition didn't read Hasidic Sefarim. Rav Simcha Zissel, the Alter of Kelim, did not look at a Hasidic Sefer at all. but Rev Dessler integrated Chassidus Sforim into the Musar curriculum.
So they were started just the Musar, didn't the Chassidus.
No, Rav Yashur absolutely did Chassidus. Absolutely, Rav Yashur absolutely did Chassidus.
Well, the shiur that I remember was like. Yeah, but
he did that too. But if you look at his sefer on Chumash, every parsha is based on the Sfas Emes. Rav Gedalia Shor was a Hasidic person. He brought in Hasidus. Yeah, absolutely. Rav Dessler has many essays on Tanya. I'm sorry,
Chaim Berlin was a Litvisher.
Chaim Berlin was a Litvish yeshiva, but Rav Hutner brought in Hasidus. That's correct. That's correct. Rav Hutner was from Slobodka, so Slobodka was not the mother, but Vilazhin was the mother, but Slobodka was the crown jewel of the Litvashi yeshivas.
What was his first name?
Rav Yitzchak Hutner.
There's a rabbi in Boston, is Vilna Rebbe. Have you heard of him?
Yes.
Because he went to Chaim Berlin, and now he's Hasidic. I didn't realize that he would have had that training.
Well, Rav Hutner did bring in Hasidus, absolutely. Although Rav Hutner was a little unusual, because Rav Hutner brought in Hasidus in a bit of a different way. Rav Hutner was a very original person. So Rav Hutner would not give a shiur by quoting other Sfarim. See, Rav Gedalia Shor would say, the Sfas Emes says this, and Rav Hutner would kind of take from everywhere and make it his own, but a lot of it, and he often wouldn't say where his sources were. Again, I don't mean Chas Shalom, he plagiarized him. It was all his own stuff, but it came from many, many different sources. So Rav Hutner's Chassidus kind of was imprinted with his more individual chidushin. Rav Gedalia Shor was more straightforward in bringing in Chassidus Yisvarim. In fact, a lot of Rav Hutner's thought, Rav Hutner drew from everything. Rav Hutner was so eclectic that a lot of his stuff even came from secular philosophy, although he would never say it. Unlike, for example, Rav Soloveitchik, who will, you know, quote Kant and Hegel and all these people. Hutner would never quote these. He only quoted Chazal.
Rav Soloveitchik had secular education.
Rav Hutner had secular education too.
He did too.
Rav Hutner, Lubavitcher Rebbe, and Rav Soloveitchik were in Berlin at the same time. Yeah, they all were in Berlin together.
Oh.
So they knew each other all the way back from there. In fact, Rav Soloveitchik Rav Soloveitchik writes that when he was a student in Berlin.
Rav
Yeshiver Soloveitchik, right.
And who else was it?
Rav Hutner.
Hutner is one, Soloveitchik is two.
And Lubavitcher Rebbe.
Oh, Lubavitcher.
Lubavitcher Rebbe was both in Berlin and in Paris, Sorbonne, but first he was in Berlin. So he writes, he was the next door neighbor of Lubavitcher Rebbe. So he writes that, you know, when he had a problem in his either secular studies or Torah. Now he didn't say he went over to the Rebbe and asked him. He didn't quite say that, but he said, I would go over to the Rebbe and we would talk about it. So they actually exchanged conversations. He said later, a little bit of a joking way, he says, he knew the Lubavitcher Rebbe before Matan Torah. He says, I knew him all the way back then, and the like. So it must have been a very interesting... Berlin was a very interesting place in those days. Yeah, Rav Chil Yaakov Weinberg was older, but he was in Berlin too. A great, great Talmud Chacham. Rav Chaim Heller there were a number of big Talmud Chachamim who had gravitated from the yeshivos of Europe, or Hasidic communities. Rav Abraham Heschel was there, who at that time, I assume, was totally from. You know, what happened later was a little different, but...
Einstein
was there too, but he was not... Einstein was not a university student. Einstein was older.
So, did they overlap while he was a professor there?
No, they didn't. Einstein was already, I think, in the United States, I think, or... Yeah, he may have been in Zurich, in Switzerland. He was not teaching in Berlin at the time. Although this rumor, I read this. There's a rumor that Lubavitcher Rebbe had Einstein as a professor, but I think they showed the dates though. The dates didn't match, so it wasn't the case. So why did I bring this up? Oh yeah. So if you read Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Soloveitchik will openly quote secular sources all the time. He'll say Kant, Hegel. Rav Hutner absolutely never quotes them, but on the other hand, he assimilates them and he does use them in different ways.
The Rambam, like
the Rambam also doesn't quote. The Rambam never quotes his sources. So they say that somebody once went to Rav Hutner and told him over a pshat in something. So Rav Hutner slapped him in the face and said, "You got that from Heschel, whatever it is." Whatever. So Rav Hutner was aware of all these different things. So Rav Huttner filtered Chassidus in kind of a different way than Rav Gedalia Yisroel. Gedalia Yisroel was more explicit. And then you had in Tarvah Das Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, who was not into Chassidus, but he was into things like history, Jewish history, and other things, which again were not that common among Rashi Yeshiva. So Tarvah Das, you got a perspective from that aspect of it. So Tarvah Das and Chaim Berlin were two very interesting yeshivas. So less so today. It's interesting that the things that made yeshivas distinct kind of dies out. Now the yeshivas tend to become, everything becomes alike. They don't have the distinctness, the distinctiveness, and the uniqueness that they once had.
I was thinking, you said Nefesh HaChaim, you know, with the emphasis on strict halacha.
Yeah.
But actually, Buber, who left so much the Hasidus, the original, and he wasn't a halachic person at all. So he used that.
No, that's exactly right. So in other words, you could actually say that Martin Buber is an example of what bothered Rav Chaim Volozhiner about Chassidus.
It's a straight
in
example.
Which you had a guy who just took the emotional stuff, and
And he left out this.
Thank you very much. In fact, when. Thank you. There was a tradition among Chassidus. You know, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe was the Tzemach Tzedek. Tzemach Tzedek was the grandson of the Bala Tanya. Grandson or married the granddaughter? I don't remember if he married the granddaughter. I think he married the granddaughter of the Bala Tanya. Tzemach Tzedek was also Menachem Mendel, and he was a Rebbe for many, many years, just like the last Menachem Mendel.
Yeah.
The Torah Tamima, whose father was the Aruch HaShulchan, who knew the Tzemach Tzedek very well. The Aruch HaShulchan got smicha from the Tzemach Tzedek. Whole story. The Aruch HaShulchan was not a Lubavitcher at all, but his first position before he came to Nevardik was he was a rabbi in a small Lubavitch town. So Lubavitchers would only hire you if the Rebbe approved. You didn't have to be a Chabad person. So he spent a lot of time with the Tzemach Tzedek, and he got smicha from the Tzemach Tzedek. And he mentions the Tzemach Tzedek knew he wasn't a chassid. The Zerzai did not speak Kabbalah with him at all. Just spoke, as he knew that if that wasn't his thing, he wasn't going to impose it on him. But he spent weeks and weeks in the Tzemach Tzedek's house, and they learned halachos and this and that. So the son of the Aruch HaShulchan records that he heard from his father that the Tzemach Tzedek said, Chassidim have to be very grateful to the Vilna Gaon. Because without the Vilna Gaon's opposition, Chassidus could have veered totally away from halacha, and it was the Vilna Gaon's opposition that pushed Chassidus to become very conscientious in keeping halacha, except for Zuman Tefillah, which is that's actually a weakness to this day. Now, so it's interesting that the Tzemach Tzedek actually said, we're grateful to the Vilna Gaon for reminding us not to go to the extreme. But it's interesting that a guy like Martin Buber actually considered the later conservatism of Chassidus to be a flaw. He liked the original Chassidus, which was freewheeling and emotion and the like. So it's interesting that what one person regarded as a positive development, somebody else regarded as a negative development. Buber didn't like that later, the fact that Chassidim were keeping all the halachas. He said he liked the anarchy of the early Hasidic movement. Okay, so this is just an important nekuda. So in Perek Lamed Tes, 39, the Bala Tanya talks about the importance of Dveikus, the importance of connecting to God. And he says the following, Mibnei zeh gamkein nikraim hamalachim b'shem chayais u'behemes. Angels go by the strange name of Chayos and Behemoth. We talk about Chayos HaKodesh. Chayos HaKodesh literally means the holy animals. And in Yechezkel's vision of the divine chariot, the supporters of the chariot are angels that have four faces. The face of a shore, an ox. Right? There's angels, the face of a lion, the face of an eagle, and the face of a human. But it's a little odd that we should, animals should be connected to the angels that are so elevated and holy. Pnei Arye, etc., Pnei Shor. So he explains the following. What are animals? Animals act out of instinct. Animals act because their natures are pre-programmed. An angel is an animal in exactly that way, because the angel serves God, because that is its nature. The angel is not a baal bechira. An angel does not make choices. An angel just is. Now, angels are higher than human beings, but they're higher because that's the way they are. And a human being is therefore greater, because a human being has the capacity to choose. And in a sense, that is more godly, because God chooses. God does not have to be anything he doesn't want to be. And therefore, a human being in the image of God is a baal bechira. This is why angels are called animals, not because of their lowliness, God forbid, but because if they're not baalei bechira, they are acting out of their intrinsic instinct. There's something Lubavitcher Rebbe used to say, I think this is from his grandfather, great-grandfather, about once, I think Rav Shalom Dov, a previous Rebbe, previous to the father of the Rebbe's father-in-law, once saw somebody playing chess on Shabbos, which he wasn't supposed to be doing. So he said, you know, you can learn something from chess as well. Everything in life has a lesson for Avodas Hashem. What do you learn from chess? So he says, in chess, the lowest piece, the lowliest piece is the pawn. Right? There is nothing lower than a pawn. But only the pawn is capable of changing its identity to be elevated. Because when a pawn reaches the end of the board, it becomes a queen. So he says, that's exactly right. All the other pieces are higher than the pawn, but they're static. They're frozen. The pawn is the lowest of all pieces. There is nothing as lowly as man, because we can do the worst sins in the world. But because of the kayach of Bechira, we can become transformed. And that's the greatness of a human being. Now, then he says, Yerasam v'avasam, the awe and the love that angels have, Tivislahem, that is their nature. Kamasha Kasav Baraya Mehem, the Raya Mehem is a portion of the Zohar, Parshas Pinchas. Ulachain, Maila Satsadikim Gedaila Mehem, the Tzadikim are higher and greater than the angels. So now he kind of quantifies this. Ki Mador Nishamo Satsadikim Biolam Habriya, Umador Hamalachim Biolam Hayitzira. So again, this already are Kabbalistic associations we don't fully understand. But if you go back to the four worlds emanating from God, the highest world in which the revelation of God is beyond any comprehension is the world of emanation that is called Atzilus. And then the next lower world is Bria, and the third world is Yetzira, formation. And the physical world that we live in is called the world of Asiya. So he quotes a passage in the Raya Mehemna that says, the souls of Atzilus.
Atzilus is the highest.
The highest, yeah.
And then?
Berea.
Yetzira.
Asiya. Our world is Asiya. The physical world is Asiya. It's called Avia. Again, there's a whole controversy. Arizal has a whole sefer called Avia.
Avia.
Now, what the Raya Mehemna says, Raya Mehemna means the faithful shepherd. It's just that part of the Zohar that talks about Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Raya Mehemna has a passage that says, the neshamos of the tzaddikim emanate from the world of Bria, which is the second highest world, and the neshamos of the malachim emanate from the world of Yetzira, which is one world lower. Hmm. Now, what that means, I don't know, but that does indicate that the tzaddik is higher than the angel. Their soul emanates from a higher place, a place of greater closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'yahevdil shebineyim. Now, he tries to explain this because, okay, this is complicated, and it's really an example of how the Baal HaTanya tries to philosophize Kabbalah. And he says the following. All right, so what do we say here? We say the greatness of the angel is they are all consumed with Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, but their chisaron is they're not balei bechira. A human being is usually going to be lower, even a tzaddik will be lower in intensity, but a tzaddik's accomplishments are more worthwhile because he's a baal bechira. That's one aspect. Now the second aspect is the Raya Mehemna that says tzaddikim emanate from the world of Bria and malachim emanate from the world of Yetzira. So he's now going to explain why Bechira is connected to Bria. In other words, why is the capacity of Bechira, choice, correlated to emanating from the world of Bria? What's the shaykhus, in other words, between Bria and Bechira?
Bria.
Okay, it's not just a wordplay. So he says this, again, this is a bit intricate. He says, in the world of Yetzira, Me'irais Sham Midaisav. Okay, let me explain this a little outside to the extent that we can explain it. That is, remember that God relates to the universe through the media of 10 spheros, 10 attributes. And of those 10 attributes, the first three are the intellectual attributes of Chachma, wisdom, Bina, and Das, understanding. The next seven, or the next six actually, are what are called the emotional attributes of kindness, strength, etc. Those are called Midais. So the first three are called Seichel, and the next six are called Midos. That's Chesed, Gevur, Teferes, Netzach, Chod, Yesod. The seventh one, which is the tenth, is Malchus. Malchus is when all of these different characteristics, Chesed and Rachamim and Teferes, are mixed and God produces his kingship on earth. So Malchus is like the hole through which everything goes through. So Malchus doesn't have a name, so to speak. Malchus is just the composite. So he says the following. In the world of Bria, God's light shines forth through the higher midos of Chachma, the higher spheres, rather, of Chachma, Bina, Vidas. So the neshama that has its connection to God in the world of Bria is connected to God through the intellectual faculties of Chachma, Bina, Das, in which they perceive God through the mind and the intellect, which is the instrument that chooses to behave, right? We make choices by our seichel. And since in the Olam HaBriya, the light of God is through the Chachma Bina Vidas, that which emanates from that world will have Bechira. In the Olam HaYetzira, God's manifestation is only through the emotional characteristics, which are called the Midais. And therefore the malachim absorb the light via the emotional, via the feelings, via the involuntary reactions. But they don't link up to God on the intellectual level, which would enable them to be balei bechira. So he says, that's what the Raya Mehemna means when it says, the neshamais of tzaddikim emanate from the world of Bria, and the neshamas of the malachim emanate from the world of Yetzira. Again, this is a complicated and deep way of expressing the basic idea, which is not so complicated, that malachim don't have choice and human beings have choice. But Kabbalistically, he says, it's because our neshamos emanate from a radiance of God which goes through the kochos of Chachma, Bina, and Das, which are the intellectual attributes which enable choice. The malachim's neshamos come through the revelation of God's light in the spheros of emotion, and therefore their capacity is limited to the emotional responses over which they do not have bechira, and that's called the olam hayitzira. That's what he says. Right, that's his explanation, and that's what he says. And again, he brings from the tikkunim. Again, these are all works of the Zohar. The Zohar has many, what you might call, treatises in the Zohar that have separate names. There's Tikkuni Zohar, although Eitz Chaim is different. Tikkunim is part of the Zohar. Eitz Chaim, that's the Ayin Ches, the Tree of Life, is not the Zohar. That's the main work of the Arizal. The main save, the Ari wrote many, well, actually, I want to correct myself. The Ari actually wrote nothing at all. Everything we have from the writings of the Ari are from his Talmud, Rav Chaim Vital. Right, so when they say Kisvei Ari, they mean Rav Chaim Vital. But the main sefer that Rav Chaim Vital wrote that explains the teachings of the Arizal is Eitz Chaim. Now, that's the main one. So it says in the Tikkuni Zohar and the Eitz Chaim, the Shis Sefirin, the six emotional spheros, Mekananin, they establish their nest, an interesting expression, B'Yitzira, in the world of Yitzira. Lachain, therefore, Zosi Avodas HaMalachim, Tamid. This is the service of the angels, Yomam V'Layla, Lo Yishkotu, they never stop. Lamod B'Yira V'Fachad, they stand in awe and reverence. V'Hainu, Kol Machane Gavriel, Shemi Asmo, V'Avodas Machane Michal, U'Ava. In other words, he's just giving an example. Right, the two most prominent angels that we mention in Tanakh is we mention the angel Michael,
Gavriel,
and we mention Gavriel. And actually, according to the Zohar, Gavriel is the angel of justice, punishment, and awe. And Michael is the angel of mercy and love. And since we always say that Chesed is the right arm, and Gevura and Din is the left arm, because anthropomorphically, we're portraying God as a righty, so to speak, meaning the dominant attribute is mercy. So therefore, the concept is, Michael is to the right of the Almighty, and Gavriel is to the left, and these are the kochos of love and the kochos of fear. But everything is operating on an instinctual level. Aval, biolam habria, but if you go higher to the world of Bria, that's the second world from Atzilus, Meira is sham chachmaso ubinaso vidato shel ein sof baruch. The light is directly the chachma, bina, and das of the Almighty, which are the makor, they are the ultimate source of these emotional characteristics. The aim v'shayrish lehem. In fact, the Zohar says chachma and bina are called Abba and Ima. They are called father and mother. They are the decisions that God makes as to how the midos will be manifest. Giza b'tikunim, de'ima ilah. It says the upper mother, which is bina, mekanana, dwells bitlas sefirin in the three spheros of chachma, bina, and das, bekarsaya, in God's throne, which is the olam habria, lachain hu mador nishmos atzadikim. Therefore, it is the chamber of the souls of the righteous who are Ovdei Hashem, who do serve God, b'dechilu urechimu, with fear, with awe, and with love, but not the awe and love of the instinct, but the awe and love that comes from their intellectual comprehension. Again, let me remind you that the thesis of the Tanya is that within our hearts there is a natural law, love, and fear of Hashem. That all we have to do is access it. But, interestingly enough, he says, that when you fear and love Hashem because of the Ava Tivis that is in your heart, that is not yet the High Madrega. The High Madrega is a different love and fear that comes from the contemplation of the Seichel, that is called Chabad. And he says, when you have that capacity, your neshama is actually connected to the world of Bria, not just the world of Yetzira, to a much, much higher world. And that's what he says. He says that the tzaddikim are Ovdei Hashem. Again, these words are very important. B'dechilu urechimu, this is Aramaic for reverence and love. Hanim shachos, that are pulled down, min habina, from the intellectual faculty of understanding and das, gedulas ein sof baruch hu. Avazu is called reusa deliba, the love of the heart. But again, what he means is not the love that is instinctual, but the love of the heart that is aroused from the moach, from the mind, umei rusa deliba, and from that love, that is the garment of your soul coming from the olam habriya. And he gives another, again, he all sorts of terms here. This is what the Zohar refers to as Gan Eden Ho'elyon. Again, this is a very heavy-duty stuff. But the Zohar refers to Gan Eden Ho'elyon, the upper Garden of Eden, and the lower Garden of Eden. And the upper Garden of Eden is the world of Bria, where the neshamos of the tzaddikim get their capacity of choice, because they receive the light of God emanating from Chachma, Bina, and Das. The Gan Eden HaTachtein is when they receive the light of God via the six lower spheres. Now, Lubavitchers actually apply these terminologies to 770. I mean, you may hear the phrase, they'll call 770 Gan Eden HaTachtein, but that's... I don't know how serious they mean that, if that's just a matter of speaking. But here, the Baal HaTanya says, Gan Eden HaElyon is the Olam HaBriya, Gan Eden HaTachtein is the Olam HaYetzira, he says. And he says like this, U'chemashikasa b'zorah v'yakel. But then he says, Ach, Hainu dafka neshama ismamish. Okay, we'll have to stop here. But again, this goes on very, very complicated, because he'll point out that in a sense, most Jews do not necessarily activate the love and fear of God from the seichel. There are two possibilities for most of us. The worst possibility is we don't even feel love and fear of Hashem at all. It's in our hearts, but we're not even consciously aware of it. That is common, but that's a bad place to be. The other, which is much, much better, is we've activated the natural love and fear of God in our hearts, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. But that still is not being connected to the world of Bria. In order to be connected to the world of the Bria, you have to generate love and fear of God from the seichel itself. And that's going to be, so that's what he's making. He's going to make a point that the notion that I'm connected to Hashem at the highest levels can only occur when I've activated the love and fear of my heart through the capacity of the seichel, not through the emotions. Now, it's tricky. I mean, one of the questions that you could ask is, well, how do you know if you're there? It's a little difficult to... It's a little difficult to understand, because we're now defining two different loves and fears of God. Right. There's the love and fear of God that is called the Ava V'Yira Tivis, which is Musuteres. It is concealed in my heart, which I have to access. And then there's the love and fear of God that comes from the Seichel, in which I connect to the Chachma and Bina and Das of Hashem, coming from the Olam HaYetzira. I'm sorry, the Olam HaBriya. Now the question is, do those feel differently? In other words, we have love and fear of Hashem. How will one feel versus the other? How do you know if you have one or the other? What exactly is the test? And what exactly is the intellectual contemplation that we're talking about? What is the process? The truth of the matter is, let me point out, a lot of this language, as heavily Kabbalistic as it is echoed in very similar terms in none other than the Rambam. The Rambam talks all the time. And it's not clear what you're supposed to be thinking about. The Rambam says, you're misbonein, you think about Hashem, you think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and through the chachma of connecting to Hashem, Hashem will enlighten your soul. I mean, the Rambam, this is what the Rambam writes. It's through the das that you come to love Hashem. The Rambam himself says this. I mean, you could actually say a lot of this is a Kabbalistic expansion of the Rambam's own teachings. But it's not entirely clear what is it that you're supposed to be thinking about. Is this an intellectual exercise? Like, I want to understand. Now, the Rambam is mashma a little bit. that what you think about is almost science in a sense. You think about the complexities of the universe, and you think about how one thing leads to another and how they're interrelated. And in that way, that's an intellectual comprehension that fills you with awe and reverence. We call that metaphysics. What the Balatanya means is not entirely clear, but the point that this whole sefer is making is that unlocking the Ava Mesuteris Belibo Shel Adam is a wonderful thing, but that's not yet the Madrega of being Mekasher yourself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, this means, in other words, that often we arouse feelings by emotions. Certain music plays, we get excited, etc. And we feel close to Hashem. And the Bala Tanya would say about that, that's a good thing. It is obviously a good thing. But that is not the Ava and Yira, which is the end result. So this is, as I said many times, this is a very Litvisha Hasidisha approach. In other words, he says that the arousal of the emotion is not sufficient. And that is why it is said that this is called Chabad Hasidus, and other Hasidus is called Chagat Hasidus. Chagat is an abbreviation for the first three emotional spheres, Chesed, Gevurah, Teferis. So there's one thing which is Chagat, and the other is Chabad. Now, I'm not sure if the other Hasidim would call themselves Chagat. I'm not sure if that's kind of an insult or whatever it is, but there's Chagat versus Chabad. And the Bala Tanya's standard is a very, very high and difficult standard. Okay, well, we'll stop here. So have a good Shabbos, good week. Say again?
They'd be more like
Malachim. That's right. Like Malachim. In fact, it's interesting, you know, this is an interesting little story. You know, one thing that people don't realize is Chabad and Lubavitch were not synonymous for a large part of the 19th century. In fact, until after World War II. Because there were, and as all Chabad Hasidim traced themselves to the Rav Schneur Zalman. Right? Rav Schneur Zalman is the founder of Chabad Hasidus. But the hereditary line, there were breakaways from Chabad. There were breakaways of disciples. And not just disciples, even other sons. The Tzemach Tzedek had many sons. So there were in Europe non-Lubavitch Chabad Hasidus. Kaputz was a famous non-Lubavitch Hasidus. Not all Chabad followers accepted the Lubavitcher Rebbes. Lubavitch was a small town, etc. And there were times in which there were five or six Chabad groups. Now what happened really, after the war, it's fairly recent, after World War II, what happened was that, you know, all of these groups were decimated, etc. So when Rav Yosef Yitzchak came to America, Agudas Chasidei Chabad, which was kind of an omnibus organization for all Chabad Chasidus, they accepted him as a Rebbe. So really, Lubavitch didn't become total Chabad until after World War II. And that's why you'll find even today some older shuls are Nisachari and they're not Lubavitch. You know, it goes back to, because they were founded by non-Chabad. That's why there are Schneersons who are not in Lubavitch or Rebbe, but they're related, you know. So there was a breakaway. There was a breakaway group in New York. They were called the Malachim. They were called the Angels. And they were Chabad Hasidim, but they were non-Lubavitch. And they only accepted the first three Lubavitcher Rebbes. They accepted the Bala Tanya. His son was the Mittler Rebbe, just a Rebbe for a very short time, and the Tzemach Tzedek. They didn't accept anyone after that. And those are the Sfarim that they learned. And I think there may be still a few around. I think they eventually kind of converted to Satmar. It eventually didn't become a Chabad movement anymore.
They were called the Malachim.
They were called Malachim. No, they were called Malachim, not for that. They were called Malachim because...
They were white, right?
Some of them were white. They were Mekubalim. But the reason was because the Rebbe, Rev Levin, was the breakaway person. He had a reputation as a very kadosh person. They called him a malach. In fact, what's the story? They tell the story. There's a lot of stuff. Lubavitch has a lot of interesting inside stories. They tell the story. He had been the tutor of Rav Yosef Yitzchak as a child. When Rav Yosef Yitzchak was a child, Rav Levin had been the tutor. He had worked for Rav Shalom Dov as a tutor. And once he caught Rav Yosef Yitzchak reading a Haskalah book, a literature book, and he reported it to the father, and the father didn't do anything, so he felt that so Rav Levin said he can't be part of this anymore. So this is some mice like that, in which he said if this movement cannot protest Haskalah, he says he's not going to be part of it anymore. So, but he lived and he was in the Bronx. He came to America. He had a shul in the Bronx. The Malachim, as I say, that they're not really distinct anymore, but in the 30s and 40s, there were a number of them still around. So Chabad was not a unified movement. You had Chabad and you had Lubavitch. They were two different. They were not necessarily the same thing.
So okay. Before the Les Drabi, there were different Chabads.
Well, let me put it this way. There was always a Lubavitch line of succession.
Yeah.
That's the Lubavitch line of seven Rebbes.
Right.
That's the Lubavitch succession. But particularly after the Tzemach Tzedek, there were other Hasidic groups that considered themselves Chabad groups, but they did not acknowledge Lubavitch as their Rebbe. So they did not accept the Lubavitch Rebbe as their Rebbe.
Is that like the Gear line and the Belzer line? Or did they accept the Lubavitch?
No, that's very different. See, Ger and Belz do not trace themselves to Rav Shneur Zalman. Those are separate Hasidic movements. This is a little unusual. These are movements that acknowledge Rav Shneur Zalman's Hasidus, but they didn't acknowledge the succession of Lubavitcher Rebbes as their Rebbes. They broke away. They broke away. Ger and Belz are different lines. They didn't. They're not Chabad Hasidus. They learned Tanya, but officially they're not. They don't consider the Alter Rebbe their founder. Okay, we'll have a good time. I didn't finish. I probably will finish up what I want to.
Next time we'll still have time.
Yeah, because
right?
I still want. Yeah, we'll still have time because I want to finish up 39 and 40. But after that, I think we're going to switch. Yeah.
When are you in recession going there to Israel?
Well, I do you mean moving or visiting?
I don't know.
No, I'm not leaving. I'm making Aliyah, God willing, until May. But I have to be there for a week. So I'm going to be there for December
20th. Would you be there? I know your time is kind of working on negative time in terms of where you've been called.
Yeah.
Would you consider continuing this year like a Nefesh HaChaim maybe?
So it's a possibility.
Or Nefesh HaChaim.
I mean, I'm thinking about different things.
Maybe you would consider this time.
Yeah, this would be the same time. This would be the same time. Yeah. I'm not sure about that because I may have my semester changes. But I'll.
There's the idea of a weekly thing.
Yeah, it'll either be this time or back to Wednesday. That's my problem. My problem is my Wednesday and Thursday constantly gets shifted.
Back to Thursday. Maybe.
Back to Thursday. Are you changing the schedule?
I think I may have to go back to Thursday, but I'll announce.
Okay.
But we can still keep the time. If not Wednesday night, be Thursday night.
Beautiful.
This is called three volumes. They're hard to get. They're called Svarim V'Sofrim.
Is this different than Sipuri Rav Zevin?
Yes, Rav Zevin has many Svarim. He has Moed and Bahalacha.
No,
Rav Zevin has Sipuri Chassidim. Yeah, thank you. Rav Zevin has Moed and Bahalacha, which is absolutely a fantastic book. Ishim V'Shitas, which are biographies of Gedolim. Very, very fantastic book. And Svarim V'Sofrim, which are collections of book reviews. Sipurim is the least important of his books, although it's important.
Oh, the Hasidish is Sipur stories.
He was a big Talmud Chacham, and he was a beautiful writer. But you can learn modern Hebrew from him. He has a beautiful literary style.
And his book in Halacha, what's called?
Which Mo'adim Bahalacha.
Mo'adim Bahalacha is a beautiful book.
Very excellent.
Isn't it